station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Halaiva. It's time for In the Garden on the Pond.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. I'm your host, Paul Massey, Director of Regenerations Botanical Garden, and on today's show, we'll take a look at makahiki, theorize on the biochemical sequence of plant nutrition, and get a report on the Waipawa Foundation from Director Stacy Sproat. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and More, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and More features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostulas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
And thank you so much to our generous underwriters and to you, the listeners, for tuning in and supporting us here at KKCR. Just a reminder, KKCR is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, making it capable of receiving tax-deductible donations. People starting to think about that at this time of year. And it couldn't be easier. Just go to kkcr.org and click on the donate link or just click on that beautiful rotating list of photographs right there on the front page, and it'll lead you to a donation opportunity. We sure appreciate your help. We count on it, and it keeps us fueled up. And the only reason we're here today is because you've supported us in the past and in the present. So thank you so much for that. And I'm grateful that Laura Christine is joining me in studio right now. We are going to spend the hour with you. Really grateful to do that, although I must say it's a bit difficult peeling myself away from one of the most beautiful days in memory out there. Cool, windy, breezy, beautiful, sunny, a great time to work. The ground is drying up a little bit here on the North Shore, which makes it possible even to drive the truck up to the work site, much less get the work done. So it's a good time, and I'll be jumping back out there again, but for now I'm here with you. We've got a great show planned. We're going to start with our celestial session, as we do, looking to the heavenly skies above for inspiration, guidance, very specific information about what's going on in the heavens above that influence our planting, our harvesting, and other gardening and farming activities. We'll start with the Hawaiian moon phase brought to us today by the 2015 Western Pacific Regional Management Fishery Council calendar available online. Also, the U.S. Naval Observatory's Astronomical Applications Department gave us some precise timings of things. And today's Hawaiian moon is Lono, Lono is in the Emmy or diminishing Anahulu, the third Hawaiian week in the Hawaiian Moon Month. And Lono rose over Kauai at 5:32 a.m. this morning. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 11:18 a.m., and she'll set at 5:01 p.m. this afternoon. Only 3% of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated today, and new moon is coming up early on Friday morning at 12:30 a.m. So we may find ourselves out there looking at the meteor shower that I'll tell you about in just a minute. But let's stick with Lono. Lono, one of the four major deities brought to Hawaii from Kahiki, or the islands of Tahiti and the surrounding Society Islands. Lono is the god of agriculture, the god of thunder, rain, and harvest. There are some planting recommendations today from the Hawaiian moon perspective. Ipu, gourds, as well as melons, which are the body or kinolau of Lono. Other Lono kinolau plants are kukui, uwala, the sweet potato, ava, kava, and the tree ferns, amau and hapu'u. So goodness, if we were lucky enough to have those in our plant nursery, those would be some good plants to put in today. Traditionally, pua'a, or the pig, another kinolau of Lono, was not eaten during makahiki times unless it was killed before makahiki began. So that's coming up real soon, and so this might be an opportunity to follow that prescription. This year, makahiki will begin on Monday. No, that's not correct. It's actually Sunday, December 13th. So let's have a look at the Geminid meteor shower. The peak nights coming up are going to be Saturday night and Sunday night from midnight to dawn. Each night is the peak, although you could see a few before that time period. The total active time period for this meteor shower is December 6th through the 19th. I caught one a couple of nights ago. This is described by the Bishop Museum's J. Wadamal Planetarium as one of the best showers visible here in the Hawaiian Islands. And we have good weather in December in general. So to see it, it's clearing up a bit, as I had said earlier. And conditions are promising this year since it coincides with that new moon. So we won't have the moon obscuring, hopefully, our view of the beautiful meteor showers. So let's have a look at makahiki. Makahiki coming up and calculated thusly. Also, thanks to the Bishop Museum's Planetarium for this calculation. The start of makahiki is marked by waiting until the star cluster of the Pleiades rises at sunset, which occurs near the end of November. Then you wait for the new moon that follows this sunset, which is coming up on the 11th. Then we wait for the first visible crescent moon that follows this new moon. This year, this crescent is going to be visible if the skies are indeed clear on Sunday, December 13th. This is marking the beginning of the makahiki season. So what is the makahiki season? This is a time for celebration, rest, rejuvenation. And I've got a really nice reading I'd like to share with you. This coming from HawaiianHistory.org. And this is the description of makahiki. Makahiki festival punctuated the yearly farming cycle in ancient Hawaii. Celebrating harvest and Lono, the Hawaiian god associated with rain and fecundity, makahiki marked a temporary halt to activities of war and occasional lesser changes in many other daily routines. For religious reasons, that coincided with seasonal weather. Activities such as deep sea fishing, associated with Ku, the god of war, were kapu, or prohibited, during makahiki. Beginning in late October and early November, when the Pleiades constellation was first observed rising above the horizon at sunset, now December in this year, the makahiki period continued for 4 months, through the time of rough seas, high winds, storms, and heavy rains. Probably not a good idea to go colonize new islands at this time. Makahiki was a time to gather and pay tithes to chiefs who redistributed the gifts of the land, a time to cease farming labors, and a time to feast and enjoy competitive games. Hawaiians gave ritualized thanks for the abundance of the earth and called upon the gods to provide rain and prosperity in the future. Lono, the god of fertility and rain, who we celebrate today, as today is the Lono moon phase, was identified with southerly storms. He is sometimes referred to as the elder brother of Pa'o, the influential priest who also arrived from the south and who instituted new rituals and beliefs in the Hawaiian religion. Lono took many forms, or kinolau. He could be seen in the black rain clouds of Kona storms, in flashing eyes that resembled lightning, or in kukui, a plant associated with the pig god Kamupua'a. Kamupua'a and Pele were both close relatives of Lono. Pele is sometimes considered Lono's niece, sharing his southern origin and favoring the rainy seasons and southern coasts for her eruptions. The highest chief of the island acted as host to Lono during Makahiki, performing ceremonies to mark the beginning and end of the festival. The chief collected gifts and offerings, food, animals, kapa, cordage, feathers, and other items, on behalf of Lono, and redistributed them later amongst lesser chiefs and their followers. The chief declared the kapu on produce and the land, which was observed as the Lono figure, a staff topped by a small carved figure and a crossbar supporting a white sheet of kapa, was carried around the island perimeter in a clockwise direction. Lono's retinue stopped at the boundary of each ahupua'a, where a stone altar, or ahu, included the carved wooden pig, the pua'a, and where gifts of the district had been collected. The slow circuit of the island took several days. Once all the tribute to Lono and the chief was collected, communities gathered to celebrate with feasts and games. Chiefs and commoners competed, as well as those trained as athletes. Boxing was a favorite spectator sport. Both men and women participated in the competitions. Some contests were sham battles that resulted in death. Other games included ulu maika, a type of bowling, foot races, marksmanship with pahe'e, or short javelins, puhenehene, a guessing game with pebbles, that often involved sexual wagers, wrestling, and hula dancing. Sounds like fun! Hula, under guidance of the goddess Laka, sister to Pele, offered many chants and dances composed specifically for Makahiki. They honored Lono, the chief, Kane, the god most closely associated with Kalo, and were meant to invoke rain and fertility. In addition, the games and circuit of the Lono figure, the chief observed further religious ceremonies. Makahiki rituals were the most festive of the Hawaiian religion and included dramatic pageants and other acted-out scenes. The pageant of Kaho'ali'i honored a mythical hero sometimes associated with the dark underworld, where the sun goes at dusk. The pageant of Ma'aloha, or the net of Makahiki, featured a net of food symbolizing the Pleiades and a future period of prosperity. Once the proper rituals and ceremonies were performed, the chief lifted the kapu on fishing, farming, and war, and a basket of food was ritually set adrift on the sea, lashed to the outrigger on a wooden canoe. Normal life resumed, and the farming cycle began again. That reading again on the Makahiki from HawaiianHistory.org. What a rich and beautiful cultural experience that must have been back in the time of its height. Of course, we can still celebrate Makahiki in many forms, and certainly the abundance of the land gives us apt opportunity to do so. So moving on now to the biodynamic look at things brought to us by Heaven on Earth Starts. We're looking at a time where we're still in the Northern Hemisphere transplanting time through Friday, and we're smack dab in the beginning, I should say, of a leaf time, because Wednesday through Friday, the moon is in Scorpio, which is a water sign. It means that it's a good time to work with our leafy plants and recommendations for planting butter lettuce. Finally, romaine lettuce and cabbage kale would be good. Saturday, through Sunday, the moon is in Sagittarius, a fire sign. Now the moon, now we've come into the ascending moon, not as good for planting, but a good time to prune, harvest, and weed. And then Monday and through Tuesday of next week, the moon is in Capricorn, an earth sign, a good time to work with our root plants. And that is the biodynamic look at things. Thank you so much, Robin, from Heaven on Earth Starts, for keeping us apprised of those influences. And you're listening to KKCR. This is In the Garden on the Farm with your host, Paul. And we're going to have a call coming in pretty soon. Special guest on the show, Stacy Sproat-Beck from the WIPAW Foundation. They just held fantastic Kahlo Festival there last weekend. They've got a lot of other great things going on we're going to hear about. But for now, we're going to jump into an opportunity to be the change that you like to see in the world. If you like the idea of a world that is a little bit less toxic, we're giving an opportunity. We are being given an opportunity by a great organization, the Pesticide Action Network, to add our voices to a letter to the EPA. They are currently they're working out, they're altering their regulations based on a particular pesticide, and I'm not sure I'm going to say it right, but chlorpyrifos. Chlorpyrifos has been in use since the middle 60s, manufactured by Dow Chemical. And according to the National Pesticide Information Center, which is a service of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Administration, as well as Oregon State University, chlorpyrifos is a bioaccumulating toxin that's harmful to bees, birds, notably mallards, and of course our native Kahlua duck is really a type of mallard duck, mallards being the ancestors of all the ducks except for the I can't think of the name right now, but the Muscovy duck is from a different lineage. But the Kahlua duck did descend from the mallard, so no doubt it is also susceptible to the toxin chlorpyrifos. So as well, it's toxic to fish and notably children who it's been discovered that they have learning and memory impairments from exposure to this pesticide. Well, my understanding is that this new regulation is going to ban the use of this chemical on food. However, it's still going to be allowed to be used in other conditions. One of them would be on non-food crops. So obviously there's a lot of those biofuel crops and biotech crops as well, seeds. So essentially, even though this new regulation will be in effect, it will still allow for the spraying of chlorpyrifos on our southern shores of this island by people who are using it in their monocrop agriculture operations. And, of course, chemicals like this really are about propping up a type of agriculture that is widely regarded as unsustainable, and that would be the large industrial monocrop agriculture. Growing the same crop season after season in the same area allows for a buildup of pests, and this is what has led in many cases to the use of these chemical cocktails that poison our streams, our ocean, our soil, and our people. So it's a big puzzle, and it does involve a transition to different kinds of agriculture. But it also needs to be stemmed at that point where these chemicals are even allowed for use. Chemicals are great things, but they need to be used appropriately. And certainly there are plenty of alternatives from a non-toxic standpoint. So all this to say, there is an opportunity at the Pesticide Action Network to add your voice, if you so choose to do it, to make sure that chlorpyrifos is completely banned for use in the U.S. And you can find out more information at panna.org. That's PANNA.org. And great opportunity to be the change. So I want to let you know that we have an exciting opportunity coming up this weekend. We've been getting ready for the past few weeks at the Kauai Food Forest. We're having our third year celebration and commemoration of planting from back in December 2012. We've been doing a lot of chop and drop on our nitrogen-fixing trees, which perform important functions and have played a key component to our process there. And now we're getting really to harvest this 3 years worth of growth, and we have indeed harvested our NFTs, most notably the Egyptian pea tree, Sesbania sesbin, which has done a tremendous amount of nitrogen fixation under the soil. And this year, I'm happy to say we caught it at the right timing, because the way nitrogen fixing trees and other nitrogen fixing plants work is through an association with a bacteria that lives in the soil, the rhizobial bacteria. And the plants, whether they be annual or perennial, go through a cycle where they store nitrogen, but then they use it up when the plant flowers and fruits. And so if you want to get the maximum benefit from the nitrogen fixation, you need to cull or harvest your nitrogen fixing plants just before those flowers develop optimally. When you see the buds coming out, it's time to harvest them up. If you wait until flowering and especially the fruiting occurs and the seeds are made, that stored nitrogen from the previous season is going to get utilized by the plant. So we were very lucky this time that although we saw a little bit of flowering on our Sesbania, we pretty much got them out at the perfect timing. And people wonder and are always asking me, what is the best nitrogen fixing tree to use? My opinion is it's not about one. Again, it's not about monocropping something, but it's about using plants that have different qualities to them in concert with each other to get the maximum effect. And the plants that we have used most in most density in the food forest as far as nitrogen-fixing plants go are this Egyptian pea, Sesbania sesbin, as well as Gluricidia, Madre de Cacao. Gluricidia sepium is the second one. The third would be pigeon pea. And the benefits are complementary if you use them together. The Gluricidia, which will continue to live on for many years in our food forest, is a plant that can be heavily coppiced, or all of the green material can be cut off the plant, and the plant will regenerate. It will resprout. You'll get plenty of new green growth to enhance your biomass, and it's the perfect carbon to nitrogen ratio when it's placed on the ground for the microorganisms to be able to utilize for their food source and add carbon, add organic matter. It's a really good thing. Now, the Sesbania, if you cut it back, it does not persist, which can be a good thing if you really want to clear the space and free up the root zone. So we've seen this tremendous growth on these trees, 25, 30 feet tall. Now we're taking them down, and you can imagine how much root mass is left behind. So we're able to, with the Sesbania, the Egyptian pea, by another name, to add so much carbon in all the body of those roots, as well as all those nitrogen-fixing nodules, breaking down from the Sesbania roots to feed our fruit trees and our other productive plants in the forest. So many, many thanks to all the people who turned out over the past couple weeks at the food forest. Especially last week, we had a super burst session on Wednesday and Saturday. Very skilled hands with some power tools taking those trees down. We still have a ways to go, and I want to invite everybody out today to give a hand this afternoon at the food forest. For directions, you can go to our website, ribg.org, and that'll give you directions, but we're basically located up Kalihiwai Ridge Road. And we'll be there today. We'll also be there on Saturday. And we'll probably be there a couple of extra days. If you want to find out the work schedule, see how you can fit in, give me a call. 652-4118 is my number. Just write it down. So, yeah, that's some of what's going on. We are going to be doing a memorial planting on our celebration this Sunday from 10 to 1. And we're going to be doing a mini seed exchange. People have been asking about the seed exchange, and you will have an opportunity to bring seeds and share them with your community. Cuttings would be fine. Potted plants might be a bit much. We do like to do, we're trying to keep it low key in terms of our needing to staff and check plants for pests and diseases. So probably cuttings and seeds would be better for a mini seed exchange this Saturday, Sunday rather, Sunday the 13th. And yeah, come on out. There'll be food. We'll have tours of the forest. And of course, we're always interested in letting people know how they can get involved. If you haven't seen the forest in a while, if you've never seen the forest, come out and have a look. You'll see how much growth we've had. The diversity of plants is really inspiring. We want to put in a lot more as time goes on. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's one of only a few great events that are happening over the next week. I will say if you're on the south side and you don't want to travel too far, right around the same timing on Sunday is NTBG's McBride and Allerton Garden South Shore Visitor Center Grand Opening from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's located at 4425 Lawai Road in Poipu. And not exactly sure, but I think that they totally rebuilt the place and really focusing in on making the visitor experience to NTBG absolutely as best as it could be. So a lot of fun on that particular event. And it's going to be really good. So NTBG's McBride and Allerton Garden South Shore Visitor Center Grand Opening this Sunday from 10 to 2. Wish I could be in both places, but I'm going to be up at the Food Forest. So I want to talk a little bit about a particular process that we have in the forest, a way in which plants work with each other to ensure good development and growth. But I'm going to hang on just a second because I'm anticipating a call from Stacy. So for now, I'll just say I'm really grateful to be here with you. This is In the Garden on the Farm with your host, Paul. I'm here until 1 o'clock on KKCR. And coming up at 1 o'clock, we have Kauai Vibrations with Tracy and Shaka Kayaka from 3 to 5. Kauai Surf Stories is coming up at 5 o'clock and lots of other great programming. And so stay tuned if you would. Today we're going to be talking about Kahlo. The Kahlo Fest was fantastic. Got there, unfortunately, a little bit late to see all the offerings, but it was a perfect sunny day. And what a great community event. So many people turned out. And a beautiful, beautiful time. And I think we're just about to hear from Stacy. So let me see if we've got her on the phone. Stacy, is it you? Hello?
Paul.
Hey, Stacy. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for calling in the show. We're speaking with Stacy Sprope-Beck, director of WIPAW Foundation and so many great community events.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. So what a fantastic turnout for the Kahlo Fest.
We are so grateful that so many people decided to come to WIPAW on Sunday. It was a beautiful day.
It was awesome. And I'll say the first thing that really blew me away after knowing WIPAW is, you know, just finding a parking place, of which there was ample, even though there were so many people there. But the amount of development that you've done on your infrastructure and
we're developers.
Has blown me away. I mean, the place is completely transformed from 5 years ago. You wouldn't practically recognize it because there's so much work has been done, and it seems like the flow is really good there.
There has been a lot of change, and we're pretty excited about the new facilities that we have to offer, and we've been working on them for a long, long time.
Right on.
So for me, we're there every day, so it seems like I don't notice it as much. But I know that for so many people in the community, it's really come develop really quickly, just the visible structures there.
Right.
I think, but for us at Waipaw, those new structures took 10 years to permit, fundraise for, contract and design and construct. And so for us, it's like, it kind of feels like they've been there forever. But they finally are just manifesting, yeah.
Well, I remembered them on the plan 15 years ago, and now they're there. And so hats off to you for holding such a strong and clear vision and giving the community just the best feeling place to put their focus, their energy, and their support.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and we have to thank the community. So many people over the years have come out to our fundraisers and our events and luaus that we had years ago, and donated towards, and just sent money and donated towards that kitchen.
Well, you always make it so fun.
It's a group effort.
You make it so fun. It makes it so easy for people to want to come.
Isn't that great? We like it when it's fun. I kind of joke with my team at Waipaw that we're always just making parties for us and our friends, it feels like.
Well, it's literally true. And yet that fun, you know, funs can sometimes be taken or translated as something that's kind of superficial or not really meaningful. But your fun is always grounded in so much depth and so much meaning and so much perpetuation of Hawaiian culture and everything that matters here. So,
thank you, Paul.
Yeah.
We try.
You're a true inspiration.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I was actually sort of in preparation for our talk. I was figuring you would ask me something like, why do you guys do the Kalo Festival?
So, Stacey, tell me, why do you do the Kalo Festival?
And I was thinking, you know, really, if you think about Waipaw and the things that we do, so much of those things are around food, and local food. And I think one of the things that we've remembered or figured out is that our ancient cultural connection to the land, well, a large part of it was through food. The land fed us, and we took care of it like it meant our survival or not, right?
Exactly, and that. There was no grocery store. Humans could only live where the land would allow them to.
Right. And yet, and so, and today, in today's society, we see nature and the environment, for the most part, as recreational resources. A nice picture, beautiful waterfall, a place to take a hike or a walk out in nature, and not so much as what feeds us and ensures our survival. And we at Waipaw feel like if we can reestablish that connection for people, we're way more likely to take care of something that means, well, that takes care of us, that helps us to survive, rather than take care of something that's just beautiful.
Right.
And so I think that's why we're doing food things, because we like to celebrate and inspire and enjoy and be creative with and encourage the growth of and buying more of just local food like kalo. And
yeah,
we do the mango festival too, and koi, well, and produce, and we do a lot of stuff around food.
You sure do. And I wanted to ask you about the fish pond, because the restoration you've done on it is amazing, like so many things you've restored in your ahupua'a. It's such a beautiful thing. I'm wondering, have you begun to, or do you have plans to manage it as a food resource?
Yes. Yeah, so the fish pond used to be a major food resource. In, I would say, maybe 100 years ago, I've had kupuna that passed away a few years ago that maybe were in their 80s tell me that they, when they were younger, they used to come and harvest a lot of ama-ama or mullet from there. And they're super abundance of mullet. And then it all got overgrown for maybe 50, 60, 70 years. And we were just finally able to restore it and open it up again. And now there is an abundance of different species in there. And there actually is a lot of mullet. We're finally seeing some bigger ones. I understand that I think mullet takes 2 years to grow, so they take a while. But we're not really actively harvesting from there yet. We harvest tilapia now and then because they're good eating and they're invasive.
Right.
We're all about harvesting invasives and eating them. But we always want to conserve and grow the populations of our native species.
Yes.
I think it'll be a while before we begin harvesting mullet there. And, you know, Uncle Sam Mahuiki, who's one of our kupuna in Haena, I'll just share a little story because it kind of explains where we're at, where I'm at with that. I was expressing to him how many people come and harvest Samoan crabs out of our river. And it seemed like the population was decreasing. And nobody really does anything to take care of the population or enhance it. And, you know, I told him, well, I don't ever harvest crabs out of the river because I always feel like there's not enough. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, there's never enough for people to harvest. When you can harvest is when you see the crabs. There's so many crabs that you see them crawling out of the river, up the river banks and onto the road. Then you know there's a lot of crabs and you can take some.
Right.
And I was like, yes, when we see massive abundance of fish, then I feel like that's when we can cull some, you know. But until that time, we'll eat the invasives and mm-hmm. maybe just harvest a little bit.
Right.
But what our pond does, too, is because it's in the estuary of Waiole Stream, is it not only, I mean, the fish don't stay there, right? It's connected to the stream, which is connected to the ocean. Mm-hmm. So we feel like if it's helping to increase the population of the fishery in the stream and in the ocean and the areas surrounding Waipa so that more people can eat and have fish, then that's good too. And so I think managing for harvest in the pond is all about just choosing when to harvest and how much. We're not permitted and we can't get a permit to actually feed the fish in there. Because it would introduce too much nutrient load into the water.
Yes.
And so the fish just kind of have to grow themselves. And when we see that there's a lot, we'll probably start to harvest them.
Would poi or kalo have been traditionally used to feed them in times past?
I'm not sure what they used to feed, if they did feed, say, mullet. And we haven't experimented with that. I'm pretty sure those things are limu eaters.
Mm-hmm.
They're vegetarians. What do you call that? Herbivores.
Okay.
They're herbivores. So they eat, I think, silt and limu and things like that. I know that the people used to feed kalo and mashed kalo and pumpkin and sweet potato to kinds of fish like opelu in the ocean. I haven't heard too much about the mullet, but there's only one way to figure it out is to try. It would be fun and see if they would come if you gave them some kalo, because that would be really good.
Well, I love that you're managing it as a nursery that can spawn other areas with fish for now, and that you're really just giving nature that opportunity to do the recovery that it can do. And thinking about those crabs, if we just let nature repair, heal, and recover from the over harvesting that we've done, it can come back. But we as a community all need to decide to take that course, because it just takes a couple people who are harvesting,
exactly.
You know, who aren't part of the game plan. So
the tragedy of the commons, right?
Truly.
Today it's all about, I need to go harvest it because if I don't, somebody else will.
Right.
But in the old days, it was exactly the opposite. is you only take it when you really need it, and then everybody will have enough.
Mm. Beautiful.
And then, but then also there are rules on top of that, because there are always some people that just can't get there, right? So that's why you need the kapu, and then the penalty when the rule gets broken is for the few people that can never get it. And then they're not around anymore, maybe.
Maybe not. Well, luckily some traditions have been modified somewhat, but so give us a I know there was a couple exciting things that happened at the Tarot Fest, and you guys did a big taste test. And
yes.
I know one friend of mine was really keen on the number 6, and I know when we did our Kahlo tasting, that certainly was a sweet variety that a lot of people favor. Did you guys tally up the results?
Oh, really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I wanted Chris Kobayashi to join us today.
We love you, Chris.
Yes, because she managed that. And I did not get results from her, unfortunately. I know that she had like something like 12 varieties for tasting.
Wow.
And she had little paper plates where people could write down the variety that they liked,
mm-hmm.
that they preferred, and we actually saw them, and they were all over the place, all the varieties. So I didn't notice, but I'm sure Chris would, and I should have asked her before you called in. But Chris did say that was something that people really enjoyed and appreciated, the opportunity to try different varieties next to each other.
Oh, yeah, I love that it was all over the place, and people had lots of different favorites.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
That's interesting that number 6 was a winner before.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of that variety? That gets grown a lot in the Hanalei Basin, yes?
It's kind of what everybody's growing.
Ah.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. It's our reality. and unlike the taste test, we don't really hold things next to each other. I mean, it's definitely different than something, say, like number 7. Which is really white, really solid, more bland mm-hmm. flavored Kahlo than number 6. Yeah, it's sweet and purple. But on a regular basis, we don't sit down and compare them so much.
Mm-hmm.
We actually prefer them for different things. Like the number 7 is, or it's moi, is preferred for pounding. And number 6 is good for poi. So actually, the Kahlo all have different flavors,
right.
And they're good for different things, different flavors, textures, consistencies, and they're good for different things.
Mm-hmm. And we are blessed with so many of the traditional varieties being perpetuated through many hands. And of course, thanks so much to Uncle Jerry and Gladys for coming over and helping to just keep that candle lit and the focus on the awareness of the importance of the diversity and all the various uses. I always love seeing him, and it's always an honor to share a little bit of time with him.
He's always so inspiring and just funny and fun to be around too. Uncle's an amazing person.
Yes,
and we
indeed.
Also, talking about that, we also need to mahalo Kavika Winter and Limahui Garden, because a lot of the Hawaiian varieties of Kahlo came from Kavika and the garden, and the collections that they're growing.
Awesome.
You provided a bunch of those Hawaiian varieties for tasting.
Mahalo to
Kavika. Kavika.
Yeah, fantastic.
And we're secretly hoping that he does it. He keeps growing them so that we can have tastings every year.
Maybe not so secretly. We'll keep that as a top priority for sure. So I know your time is tight. Before we go, though, I want to ask you about the commercial, one of the most crowning jewels in your new infrastructure is your new commercial kitchen.
Aww.
And I was lucky enough to actually eat some turkey that was cooked in your Imu for the Aninaho Thanksgiving celebration, and it was delicious. So I can personally testify that the food that comes out of that place is broke the mouth. So,
so tell
us.
It was cooked. That's amazing. First of all, it was cooked.
That's always the first, yeah, thing.
And then it was delicious, which
yes.
means it was seasoned well.
And the juices got kept in there, and, you know, it was perfect.
Yeah, emu turkey is always ono.
Yeah.
Yes, so we're pretty excited that we have finally, I think I can say, finally completed our Waipa Community Kitchen and Poi Mill. And like I was saying earlier, it's been a community dream for 30 years from the beginning of Waipa, and then it took us 10 years of active work to get it completed. But it's there, and it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And the emu is a great resource. I think that was the third emu that we made there. And the place didn't burn down when we made emus. And on that day that for Thanksgiving, I think they did 50 turkeys and maybe about between 100 and 200 pounds of ulu and uala.
Oh, my goodness.
And it wasn't even at capacity.
Wow.
So we know we can feed a lot of people out of there.
No kidding.
And it's a great way to cook. And one thing I never anticipated, because the emu is in concrete, right? It's in a concrete floor. It's all concrete. And our great idea for building that emu the way it is so that we could get it state certified, so we could do fundraisers and sell things out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that I didn't anticipate that's been the best thing yet, that the boys all tell me that do the emu, is that they're not in the mud anymore. And you know how rainy it's been in Hanalei? And
oh my gosh.
To have to make an emu when it's raining and muddy.
Right.
They are so happy to not be making the emu in the mud.
Super cool. And does it change?
Simple things like that.
Does it conserve the heat better because it's lined with concrete as well, or change?
I wonder. That's what they feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool.
I thought you were going to ask me if it changes the flavor and it tastes like concrete now.
No. I would never. I know personally. I know from personal experience it does not. It's that delicious Kahlua taste, so.
Yeah, so yeah. It's been really amazing, and we modeled that emu, Hale emu, after one on Hawaii Island at Navajo Kalani Opu'u Charter School. And it's a little bit different, so we're especially excited that it works. Our contractor was really excited that it didn't burn down because he was worried about that. And that's all good. And that is one of the buildings, and then the other building there is our community kitchen and poi mill. And those both just got certified by the health department last week. We're pretty excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
The kitchen is a fully equipped commercial kitchen. And we're excited about using it ourselves to make products from the things that we grew at Waipa and do cooking classes and workshops, and we've actually already started doing cooking classes with our after-school keiki. They've been having fun making pizza in there. I think they made banana lumpia, sausage.
Mm. What time of day is that happening?
Yeah, really. Well, their program is over until the new year.
All right.
But they were on Wednesday afternoons at Waipa. In the kitchen making yummy local food. Yeah, pizza, their pizza was with Uncle Les Gushikin made the dough with pa'iai.
Uh-huh.
And the sausage was from pigs from here. Banana lumpia. We always try to incorporate the things that we grow.
Wow.
And so we are both going to use that space for Waipa Zone programming and products, and we're also looking forward to renting it out as a commissary kitchen. And now that we're health department certified, we're putting the final touches on our policies and procedures, and then we'll be ready to start interviewing people to come in and rent it.
So exciting.
So, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And so you can have people call our office, or if they know Kaylin from the farmer's market, Kaylin's the manager.
Great.
also he will be managing youth. And we are really hoping that that just inspires and enables more food entrepreneurship in our community.
I can imagine they're going to come out of the woodwork for that opportunity, because the North Shore has been waiting for that facility for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. And so what is that office number, Stacey?
The office number at WIPAW is 826-9969.
Fantastic. And, of course, your information as well at wipawfoundation.org.
Mm-hmm. They can contact us through the website.
Super cool.
As well.
So when's the next party?
That is a good question. Well, I can say we have so many ideas for things now that we have those new spaces up. I don't know if you saw it, but we need to get you one of them. We did a new T-shirt design, Paul. The Eat the Invasive shirt. Did you see it?
No, I love it, though.
So we did a shirt with a whole bunch of different edible invasive species on it. And one of these days, we're going to start with maybe dinners and mini festivals, and then eventually we want to do an Eat the Invasives festival where all the food is made with invasive species.
I love it.
Isn't that cool?
Yep.
Then the other thing we've been talking about with Uncle Jerry, Tamika Winter, Chris Kobayashi, and other folks is in the springtime sometime, there's going to be an AVA workshop classes festival thing, sort of like a mini festival.
I definitely would love to be involved in that.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll pull you in.
All right. Stacey,
Paul,
thank you so very much for infusing the show with so much enthusiasm and good news from up on the North
Shore. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely.
Honored. And mahalo to KKCR for all that you guys do to support community.
Yay.
And us.
We
Yay.
Accept gratefully. All right, we'll see you up there sometime
soon. Okay, thanks, Paul.
Aloha. Well, that was Stacey Sproat of WIPAW Foundation. She's always so full of delight and celebration, and it comes through in everything they do. I'm truly moved by the work that the WIPAW Foundation perpetuates. It inspires me, and we're just rounding out the hour here, so I'm going to have to hold off on sharing about the biochemical sequence of plant nutrition. That'll be on a future show. Tune in next week for more. Looking forward to Jillian Seals of Calpea Farms is going to join me on the show, and we'll have a lot of good fun together, so tune in again. Just a few announcements to share. The Kauai Farmers Union United meeting happening this evening, December 9th, from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at the Anahola Clubhouse. It's located at 3900 Coelho Street in Anahola. Good news, Hawaii Farmers Union United members now receiving discounts at a couple of the biggest fertilizer retail locations here on Kauai. And tonight we're going to be treated to Michelle Rose of Cloudwater Tea Farm from Kalihiwai. We had her on the show a few years ago, and her tea is amazing. She's going to talk about running a commercial tea operation, the rewards and challenges of growing organic Camellia sinensis tea, and there'll be some samples as well. So that'll be really fun. We'll hear about organic pesticides and fungicide solutions from Ray and other chapter business. We also have the Hawaii Tropical Fruit Growers meeting coming up on Friday, December 11th at 4:30 p.m. this Friday at the Kauai Food Forest in Kalihiwai. Officer elections, beginning discussions for the International Fruit Growers Conference, which is going to be hosted this year on Kauai. A great opportunity to see the food forest. We'll do a walkthrough with David Watmore, who helped us out with our pruning, and discuss those pruning decisions that were made. That's this Friday at 4:30 p.m. Then this Sunday, the 3 years in gathering at the Kauai Food Forest from 10 to 1 p.m., Malama Kauai Community Farm at Waikoa Plantation. So for more information, go to ribg.org for that one. And then I told you already about the NTBG McBride and Allerton Gardens South Shore Visitor Center grand opening on Sunday as well from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. down in Lawai. And, or Poipu, I should say, but on Lawai Road. That'll be a great celebration, too. So thanks again for tuning in and sharing this passion about growing plants and working with the Aina, perpetuating all things good and green and growing. And I want to invite you to tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land. Aloha, everybody.